All right, the exhibit for the record will be identified as a table of current status of construction permits. Is that acceptable, Mr. Morrison?
Yes, it is.
Mr. Armstrong?
No objection.
Exhibit 5 is received.
And one last thing, Kathy. Staff has requested that we identify as exhibits some correspondence we provided to staff. One is a letter, it's an undated letter, I guess, to you from the North Dakota Regulatory Office, Department of Army Corps of Engineers, Omaha District. One is an August 24th, 2010 letter to Heather Jant from the Fish and Wildlife Service. Probably want the numbers, corresponding numbers.
Yeah, what I'd rather do, Mr. Morrison, is I'd rather have you identify the exhibit and let me look at it.
Sure.
So okay. I know how it's to be described.
Okay.
Okay.
First of all, we'll talk about
Exhibit 6.
Exhibit 6. And you recall receiving a letter from the Department of the Army Corps of Engineers, is that correct?
We did. We actually specifically requested the office in Bismarck, the nearest regulatory office, to provide a letter at our request. Since the Little Missouri River crossing was by far the most significant, to confirm that that crossing would, in fact, be under the jurisdiction of Nationwide 12 permit.
And that is what we've marked as Exhibit 6, and we would offer Exhibit 6.
Mr. Armstrong.
Objection.
Exhibit 6 is received.
And then, Kathy, do you recall receiving on or about August 24th, 2010, through Heather Jant, a letter from the Fish and Wildlife Service?
I do.
And we have marked that as Exhibit 7, and we would offer that as Exhibit 7.
Mr. Armstrong.
No objection.
Exhibit 7 is received.
And then have you also seen and identified a letter dated August 13, 2010, to Heather Jant from the North Dakota Game and Fish Department?
I do.
And we've marked that as Exhibit 8 and would offer Exhibit 8.
Mr. Armstrong.
No objection.
Exhibit 8 is received.
And then finally, we have a letter dated August 12th, actually addressed to the Public Service Commission. Did you obtain a copy of this letter from the North Dakota Department of Health to the Public Service Commission?
I did.
And we mark that as Exhibit 9 and would offer Exhibit 9.
Mr. Armstrong.
No objection.
Exhibit 9 is received.
Kathy, have any of these agencies raised issues or concerns or objections to this project that haven't been addressed or satisfactorily resolved with the agencies?
The only one that I can think of is, I believe it's the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service recommended to do a aerial avian survey, a bird survey by air, preferably by helicopter. And subsequent to receiving that letter, members of my staff conversed with the individual who prepared that and outlined, due to the period of time that we're looking at, the greatest benefit by far of doing such a survey, you essentially have to have the leaves off the trees. So that would imply, and in fact is outlined in the letter, to do the survey between, I believe, like February to early April. And the issue there, of course, is that doesn't meet with the proposed timeline for this project. We, in fact, hope to have the pipeline in and operational about that same time frame. So in lieu of that, they recommended that a pedestrian survey, essentially a survey from the ground, be done. We had pointed out that we had, in fact, already conducted that survey. We had the information available, and at their request, we prepared a special report narrowing the scope of the report to just what they were responsible for and have subsequently submitted that to them for their review.
And the In addition to these four agencies, have you also consulted with a number of other national, state, and local agencies and governmental entities?
Right. In January, there were a wide number of state and federal agencies attending, you know, at that meeting. Subsequent to then, we've had multiple discussions with the Corps of Engineers, State Water Commission, State SHPO Office, U.S. Forest Service, a number of other agencies to make sure that we were, number one, keeping them in the loop and being advised of whatever restrictions that they may have for a project of this type, and in order to convey those concerns and restrictions to our client, Bridger Pipeline.
You mentioned SHPO. Have you received the final written clearance from SHPO on all the archaeological issues?
I have not seen that document.
Okay. But they've basically agreed with what you're proposing?
That is my understanding, yes.
And it's your understanding you will be getting that document, or someone will?
I believe someone will, yes.
And once it's received, we would agree to file it with the commission staff?
That is correct.
Well, Mr. Morrison, is that to be a late-filed exhibit? I'm not sure Mr. Fawn, I'm not sure what the process is. Do we identify that as an exhibit for the hearing?
I guess our request would be that it not be a late-filed exhibit, because we are going to ask that the order be issued by the Public Service Commission as soon as possible to facilitate the construction date. Obviously, if that's not received, or in any event, I think the Public Service Commission order is going to be subject to obtaining all necessary permits from all our agencies. That would include the SHPO clearance, which we would need before we encounter those sites, and we would, when we receive it, then file it. It would be docketed with the commission staff, but not be in a hearing exhibit.
That's fine. I assume, Mr. Armstrong.
Yes, Your Honor.
Kathy, in your opinion, is the proposed pipeline of such length, design, location, or purpose that it will produce minimal adverse effects?
Yes, it is.
And in your opinion, will the pipeline produce minimal adverse effects upon the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota?
Yes, it will.
In your opinion, are the corridor and the route you've identified compatible with the environmental preservation and efficient use of resources?
Yes, it is.
In your opinion, will the proposed route and corridor minimize any adverse environmental impacts while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that the energy needs are met?
Yes, it will.
I don't have any further questions at this time.
Mr. Armstrong.
Ms. Spillman, what is your role going forward during construction of the pipeline if the application is approved?
The remaining item on our work list is to complete the tree inventory, and then once the construction is underway and they've established the construction zone, I will then deploy a biologist to go out there and count any marked trees that were not taken during the construction project so that we can adjust the project tree inventory accordingly.
Will your company be involved in any of the day-to-day on-site construction activities or overseeing them?
At this point in time, we've not been engaged for that type of work.
Okay. You were involved in preparing the application in this case?
That is correct.
One of the factors that was discussed in the application and taken into consideration is other state, local government plans, you know, for the areas that are the pipeline would be constructed. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, of the requirement, yes.
Yeah, and the application mentioned that no state government or other entities had other oil pipeline plans for that area.
In the application, we had interpreted that particular factor to be relevant to other pipeline projects that had been proposed for the areas. We did do an extensive view both on, you know, publicly available Public Service Commission records to identify pending or alternatives under construction, in addition to any information that was offered by the North Dakota Pipeline Authority. So I guess if the question is, you know, why did we limit it to the crude pipeline network under proposal or under study, that was because it was our understanding. Subsequent to that, we did do a little bit broader view and looking for other development activities, not limited to crude transportation issues, and with the exception of oil exploration and installation of gathering systems for natural gas, crude oil, and a combination thereof, That's the only development that we are currently aware of that's being proposed, you know, in the vicinity of this proposed project.
And the subsequent follow-up was at the request of the commission to see if there was any further developments in that area planned. Is that your understanding?
That is correct, yes. Okay.
And we received a letter from Mr. Morrison basically reciting what you just mentioned, and I've marked it as Exhibit 11. And I believe that would be a supplement to the application for that factor.
That I believe that's the correct way to handle it, yes.
I would ask to enter Exhibit 11.
Okay.
What is the date of the letter, Mr. Armstrong?
September 7th, 2010.
Exhibit 11 is received.
Ms. Billman, exhibits, I'm going to speak about them rather broadly here, 6, 7, 8, and 9, the letters we discussed earlier. There are various recommendations within those letters sent to you or to the commission relating to this project. And I believe you mentioned the only recommendation that there was an issue with was the aerial survey for Eagle Nest.
I believe that's correct.
The remaining recommendations contained in those letters, is it your understanding that those recommendations would be acceptable and followed by Bridger?
I believe that's correct. I think the vast majority of them having to do with not disturbing the avians, the birds, essentially during nesting season, and because of the time expectation here, we'll be outside of nesting season.
And that, I guess that was part of the reason I was asking Mr. True about the timeline for this schedule, is just because some of those recommendations do apply to a timeline that would be outside of this, but, you know, if the construction takes longer or is delayed for some reason or for whatever reason, are you aware of any of those recommendations that couldn't be followed at that time?
I guess one thing that should be pointed out is while the construction zone, it depends on your definition of construction zone, and I would expect what you heard today was essentially ready for operation. Much of the construction zone or construction activity involves essentially clearing, installing the pipe, well, laying the pipe, welding the pipe, inspecting the pipe, placing it in the trench, covering the trench. So there's quite a bit of activity that occurs in the last several months that does not involve construction, on-site construction, before the line is deemed ready for operation. So, you know, even if it gets delayed, it's highly likely that there won't be any active construction earth moving that late, but there could be. Okay. I won't say, but it's unlikely.
And if there is it your understanding that these recommendations by these government agencies would be followed by Bridger?
It is my understanding.
Is the boring through the Little Missouri River, does that affect the flow of the river at all when that part of the construction is?
No, it will not impact the flow. Okay. Even while during installation, will not impact the flow.
Okay. And just so I'm clear, Exhibit 4, the reroute, I think we labeled it as a supplemental maps. My understanding is that this reroute is right now what is planned for construction.
That is correct. Okay. The red line was what was originally submitted in the application. The black line is where we're expecting to install it now.
And if anything else comes up during construction, the commission would be informed of that as soon as they can be.
Absolutely.
Now, I did have a question. If you could turn to tab 3, page 13 of the application. And for the record, that's Exhibit 2. Third full paragraph up from the bottom, and I just want to be clear on this. The middle sentence says, discussing site 32MZ2074 indicates the site has been subsequently determined to be National Register of Historic Places and will be transacted by the pipeline. I kind of assumed by reading rest of that portion of the application that was supposed to be ineligible, that area would be ineligible, is that correct?
I believe that's correct.
Okay. And then there's some discussion on the bottom of that page about eligible sites and figure 4B8A. And could you explain those potential eligible sites to me along with the maps, just so I can understand that a little better? And the avoidance of
sure.
those areas?
If you would turn to, in the map book, figure 4B8A, I have the aerial photograph.
Could I ask you for the record, I guess, probably to refer to Exhibit 4, because I see that's part of the reroute also.
Okay.
I believe
sure.
those sections should stay the same, but I...
Yep, okay. We'll use, plate 8, which is dated September 2010, which is the supplemental map. But the majority of, I think, this particular paragraph relates to a portion of this map that was not impacted by the state's reroute.
Okay. And could you explain to me the paragraph on the bottom of page, tab 3, page 13, along with the top of page 14, in relation to the map?
I just want to make sure I'm clear on which item we're talking about. Okay. In the lower half of the map, you'll see the number 12 there, which indicates section 12. You will see a rather large area denoted in gold. And then there is I'm going to use the word extension, to the east side. The original or an earlier proposed route included transecting the area which is now to the right, or the extension of that large area. And once we did the class 3, where they walked the proposed line, they identified that the area was in fact larger than what was previously reported. That information was then transmitted back to us, and in conjunction with Bridger Pipeline, we rerouted in an attempt to avoid that. You can see just below the big yellow area, it's in green, okay? That was also an extension of a previously reported area that our route team, or the Class 3 team that walked the survey, identified that site has, in fact, extended or were previously larger than was previously reported. I'm also going to point out, I think there's one other little green area here, but a number of these sites were identified as a result of our field teams going out there and studying it. With the approval of the SHPO office, Metcalf went out there and did some additional testing to gather additional information from which, in conjunction with the SHPO office, those areas, or at least the extension areas, have been deemed ineligible for listing on the National Register of Historic Places. So essentially what we were left with after repeated attempts, the route that is currently denoted in black there is the route that we've proposed. It looks a little convoluted unless you have this particular version of the map, and the reason that diversion occurs is in fact to avoid what has been reported as a very major, significantly important archaeological site that was previously reported and, through our studies, further delineated the current boundaries of that site.
Yeah, so this area in green that we were just referencing, that is ineligible?
That is ineligible. That is correct.
Okay. When we were discussing earlier about the aerial eagle nest survey, and I apologize for jumping around here, the helicopter one, you'd mentioned that you'd submitted additional information to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and we're expecting a reply from them. Do you have any idea on the timeline of that reply?
I do not. That information, that letter was very, very recently. We followed up on it just as soon as we had gotten it with the right staff and the right information and prepared a special report for them, so I doubt they've even had an opportunity to digest it yet.
And would you be I guess, agreeable to submitting their follow-up letter, similar to what we discussed when Mr. Morrison was questioning you about the SHPA letter that's expected in the future?
We would provide the commission with a copy of that letter once we receive it. That's no problem at all.
And the special report that you filed with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, you were discussing, that must have been something following up to this letter?
It was a follow-up to that letter. It is essentially recasting information previously submitted as part of the Public Service Commission application, but we essentially narrowed the scope of that report to essentially focus in on what this gentleman's scope of authority is. But, I mean, and if you're interested in that, I'm sure we can provide that.
Yeah, I think we'd like that to be provided as late-filed exhibit 13, are we on?
13.
We'd be happy to do that.
All right, Mr. Armstrong, how do you wish the exhibit to be identified?
Special report to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Is that accurate?
That'd be accurate. Or if you want to put it like the September 2010 report, because it was filed this month.
Okay.
AKA what, September 2010 report?
Yes.
Mr. Morrison.
No objection, we will file that.
Exhibit 13, a late filed exhibit, is received.
And because of the construction schedule here, and because it could or could not vary depending on the weather, are there any concerns that you've come across in your investigation and research that if this project, say, were constructed into April, May, June, or extended, that would cause you concerns for this project and the studies you conducted?
By far, the biggest issue is going to be, I guess if it could, you know, go far enough, you could catch the whooping cranes coming back. That's certainly a possibility. But, I mean, by far, the big issue is during nesting season, and that's right now expected to be avoided. In the past, you know, if there's construction remaining, you know, possibly the Fish and Wildlife Service would want a nesting survey done if it goes into that particular, if it can't be constructed as expected at this point in time.
And if that was necessary, that could be done?
Sure, absolutely.
And I think you were discussing the aquifer leading to the Kildare City water supply. And as I understand it, this pipeline is going to be, I believe, 4 feet below the surface.
4 to 6 feet, yes.
And the aquifer is 140 feet below the surface?
I would say it's in excess of 100 feet. I want to say 120 to 140 feet.
Okay. And as far as the aquifer for the Kildare supply, is that, being not familiar with that aquifer, does it span, you know, a couple miles of the pipeline, or does the pipeline cross it?
I mean, as a rule, aquifers are very, very large in size. I mean, they're multiple acres and should be measured in square miles as opposed to square feet.
Okay.
So, and that's one of the reasons we report it, because, I mean, we're crossing. It depends on people's understanding and definition.
And I understand your testimony earlier, and I don't, that it doesn't cross the city's water supply, but how much of the aquifer does it cross? How many miles of the pipeline cross the aquifer?
That's not information I'm prepared to answer today. I don't know.
Any sort of estimate at all?
I would say a relatively small amount. It depends on, you know, how wide is wide, but, you know, certainly less than 10%. And anything else than that is just a guess, and I'd be uncomfortable going any more precise than that.
Okay, thank you. I'll turn it over to commission staff.
Mr. Fawn.
A few questions. The table that you It shows the exclusion areas and the avoidance areas that are crossed by the route. And I just want to confirm, you know, it does not show the exclusion areas and the avoidance areas that are within the corridor.
I believe that's correct. I mean, one of the examples I will show is, I think, in here is the National Grasslands, and the corridor does, in fact, clip just an edge of the National Grasslands. So, yes, this is limited to by the route, to the route.
That the exclusion and avoidance areas that are within the route are shown on the other maps. Would you say they're all shown?
If you're referring to the shapefiles, the GIS system, all the information we have is denoted on those, yes.
Like the maps behind tab 4?
The predominant of the maps shown in tab 4 are the maps prepared by Metcalf Archaeology, and they provide even more detail regarding the archaeology and the cultural resource information. So I would expect that they're limited to the archaeological and cultural resources and really don't address any of the other avoidance or exclusion areas.
How about Exhibit 3? Does the Exhibit 3 show the rest of the exclusion avoidance areas?
If that's the map book, I would say yes, it does.
For the whole quarter.
Yeah. There's literally just a handful of them. I know I think it's number 4. Shows where the National Grasslands is clipped. Not 4. 3. No, 5A. 5A denotes the a piece of the National Grasslands that transects or penetrates the study corridor. And I believe later on it's on the southern portion. The southern portion indicates the two residences that are the closest to the proposed route, both of which are in excess of 500 feet away. The Kildare Mountain Scenic Byway, which is Highway 22 in this area of the state, is deemed a scenic byway. That's designated on plate 8A. The Little Missouri River is denoted in the book as well. And I believe the Huntmucker Farm is identified as an archaeological site, which is a state-designated historical site. So that would be another avoidance area that's in the corridor. So I believe everything as far as avoidance areas are in fact shown on these in the map book.
Okay. My concern is that the commission has to designate a corridor and provide a corridor certificate. And in the future, the company can, construct another pipeline within the corridor if it certifies that it will not impact exclusion areas or avoidance areas. And if the commission were to designate a corridor less than 1 mile wide for this project, how much less do you think the commission could go designating a corridor here?
That's outside my area of expertise. Certainly from the standpoint, let me use an example, not to be evasive, but what is most likely to occur is somebody build a rural home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so if they were to, let's assume the best and say you lay a pipeline beside it, and there's no intention to my knowledge that they're looking at doing that because they built a nice big pipeline or proposing to build a nice big pipeline to start with. But, they would still have to come back and address the issue that somebody's put a home within 500 feet of where they want to put the pipeline and therefore would be compelled to provide an alternate route. So from that perspective, the concerns would still be addressed even if you were to go with a corridor 1 mile wide. But mm-hmm. I understand where you're coming from, and it's your perspective, not mine.
Okay.
One, if I might add a legal perspective on that question, one of the things you heard is that there might be some future reroutes as a result of some landowner concerns.
Right.
And I guess my concern is if the corridor was shrunk too small, it's possible, you know, some of those reroutes might involve moving the pipeline several hundred feet to get from one section to the adjoining section. And if we were not in the corridor anymore, would that impact our ability to move that route as needed and only, you know, deal with the commission staff and whatever approvals the staff feels necessary? Maybe if you shrink the corridor down, you should provide some caveat that for this project, at least, necessary reroutes could still occur in the corridor subject to whatever confirmations you need that, you know, no avoidance or exclusion areas are met. Okay. Once we get this project constructed, I don't have that same concern. But we did hear today that there's one possible location where we may have to switch from one section to the adjoining section because of a landowner issue. And I don't remember the exact distance, but I believe it was a couple hundred feet in that case.
Appreciate that.
You know, if I might,
on that discussion then, John, maybe from your legal perspective, is the fact that even if we do a one-mile corridor, and the issue, of course, is that nowadays corridors basically become routes. The certification, though, that no avoidance or exclusion area would be impacted should cover, shouldn't it, any potential problem?
Yeah, I mean, what we've done in the past on those is we've actually done the same kinds of investigations that would go into the preparation of this document and then in preparation for giving that certification to the commission staff.
Sure. Okay.
So,
thank you.
That's all I have for now. Thanks.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Kramer.
Sure. You did testify, Kathy. Thank you for your testimony. But you testified earlier about the potential landowner issue, and then you also testified in general terms about the simultaneous route and corridor studying and then changes accordingly as issues came up. Were there many landowner issues during that process that caused you to have to reroute a fair bit?
There was one area where we essentially had to move the study corridor. It was big enough to where we had to move the study corridor.
Okay.
Yes.
But no more than one? And what's the issue? I mean, what was the concern? Just didn't want it in there?
Yeah, room? I guess that's probably outside the scope of my expertise. There's probably people here in a better position to answer that question.
Okay.
Because
Deborah Bell, who's the land person for Bridger and has been responsible for all the right-of-way acquisition, is here today, and we can certainly put her on.
Well, and I'd only be interested if there were a lot of issues, and if there aren't, then I wouldn't be.
And she's shaking her head no.
Okay,
so.
I understand. Thank you. You also testified that you chose at least a minimally intrusive area of the Little Missouri to cross, and the maps aerials illustrate that pretty well, and you said it's parallel to the DGC CO2 line. How close is it to the DGC line?
Again, I want to refer you maybe to somebody like Deb Bell because I have not seen the parcels, but generally, as far as limited to the crossing, I think it's within a couple hundred feet. It is not side by side.
Okay.
But there are instances where I know that's been reported to me where they got the adjacent easement. Mm. So, but on the crossing, it's a little further apart, but there are spots where it is, in fact, in the adjacent easement area.
Okay. With regard to the aquifer crossing, again, you testified in the application notes that the aquifer is crossed by the route, but you testified that there's no impact to the aquifer, to the municipal water supply. Were the other jurisdictions consulted with regard to that? Those other jurisdictions being, of course, the Water Commission or, for that matter, the City of Kildare. Do you know?
We did not consult with the City of Kildare. We're several miles away from that. Mm-hmm. And we did consult with the State Water Commission, and they, of course, will be asked to provide feedback on the permit application. But in our conversations with them, nobody has raised any objections from a water resource standpoint.
Okay. Thank you. Back to the crossing of the Little Missouri, you testified that it would be bored as opposed to open cut. Is that what kind of a boring is it? Do you know, and this is more of a construction question probably, is it horizontal directional drilling or is it more of the traditional boring that might be more conducive to, say, a road or something?
Well, I mean, it's very, the two are getting to be practically the same.
Okay.
I mean, they're limited to essentially the angle or the bend or whatever else, and there's probably somebody better here that can answer that, but it will be using the standard techniques that have become everyday, you know, sure, in going under roads and or other utility installations.
Then just a couple of more. One relates to this, your testimony about the construction corridor having to be narrower in certain areas, especially wooded areas, and I think we're all pretty familiar with that. But absent of a construction person or the contractor, one of the issues that often comes up with those is safety issues at the construction site itself. Is there any consideration given to that in your analysis of those things, or is that just sort of comes later or during the construction itself?
Our involvement is pretty much limited to the route application and doesn't extend into the actual construction. But again, I know there are representatives here from Bridger Pipeline that might be in a position to answer any concerns that you have.
Okay. And just one other question then, and maybe it's a bit of a comment, but I'd be interested in your comments. You know, so much attention is given, of course, to our cultural sites, and rightfully so, and the inventories of them and the SHPO and all of that. But sometimes I think one of the things that gets lost in some of this is the value that actually an inventory like yours brings to that very process, because while most things are probably pretty well known, are there some, I think you call them lead finds or things that in this process or maybe even just in your work in general where you actually assist the state's inventory by having a project like this that identifies things that might not have otherwise been identified, important archaeological sites, for example?
Well, we know that these types of studies do, in fact, expand the information contained in the State Historical Society's database. So it should be clear that as part of this process, there is, you know, a long-term benefit to the citizens of North Dakota that this additional information has been identified, and should subsequent follow-up be made, at least they know, you know, the relative size and what kind of findings there could be in there.
Great. All right. I have nothing further. Thank you.
Further questions from the commission? Commissioner Clark.
Just a few, and thank you for your testimony. Commissioner Kramer had asked about the Dakota Gas Line as it crosses the Little Missouri River. How far back does the boring begin and the trenching end from the river itself? Is it up on the breaks? Is it down in the floodplain? Do you know?
I'm going to hand you off to somebody else who's a little bit more familiar with it. But here's some key considerations that I think you're asking. The individual borings are not limited just to how quickly they can bend the pipe. Obviously, the crossing for the Little Missouri River, in fact, I know we've had this discussion with their construction people, is that when we did the field survey, we identified, I'm going to use the technical term, mushy areas, mm-hmm. that you might not want to put a heavy piece of equipment down there, and that you either want to, you know, start your bore further back than you would because of open water to avoid having to mat or otherwise construct access out versus the cost of lengthening that bore. Now, I do not know where that ended up, but we did point out and did provide some cross-section information and some river information associated with that to help them make that decision.
Okay, and that might be helpful to have that witness come up, because as a commission, we have had some experience with these issues of high erosion areas around river crossings, so that would be good. Thank you.
Okay.
In regard to this water supply issue with the city of Kildare, you had mentioned ongoing discussions, I think, with the State Water Commission.
Yes.
You had mentioned them. In the table, it indicates the State Water Resource Commission. Is that the same thing as?
That's the same.
The State Water
Commission?
Yeah,
that was our mistake. It should be the State Water Commission.
Okay.
There's a lot of their information they've got up on the web. So the first view we look at is the information they've got in their GIS system that can be downloaded to look to make sure that especially the municipal supplies, and we're several miles away from the city of Kildare, so to be honest with you, it was relatively low priority.
Is there actually a certificate that they're required to give to the project, or is it a matter of just reviewing it and raising an objection at a hearing like this? Or what if they do have a concern formally, what is the process by which they express that
Well, I believe the State Water Commission is one of the 22 state agencies that is contacted in the permitting process, given an opportunity to review this information and offer any objections or concerns they may have. So I would tell you that's the formal designated route, similar to the SHPO office. They're on the list as well. And so if they want to raise any objections, they have that opportunity. But in this particular case, obviously, for the SHPO office, they were involved much more on a day-to-day basis.
Sure, and you can confirm that the State Water Commission has been in contact with you and the applicant, so they at least know about it and they've received the proper notice.
Yes, I can.
You had mentioned that the route changes that we've received primarily came through at the request of the state. I suspect is that state land that it's
state land. Yes.
Can you characterize these route changes? I noticed most of them are very, very minor. I mean, they almost.
And
there's
essentially
a few that are a little bigger, but.
Right. What the state, to their credit, they've done very good in managing the land, and they have their designated quarters as a rule of thumb, like every quarter mile. And as an example, the Scenic Highway 22 north of Kildare here, the DGC line actually enters the area and runs almost immediately adjacent to the west side of Highway 22 in the first utility corridor. The state said that corridor is full. And so we had to move a quarter mile to the west to enter another designated utility corridor. In the case of the four reroutes, all of which were requested by the State Land Department, they're all of them essentially bunching the lines a little closer. Back to the question I believe one of the other commissioners raised, how close are they or how close can they be? They're going to assign the adjacent easement. And so, you know, they're keeping room available for what I will assume is future development.
I noticed in a number of spots on the maps that you've submitted, the sharp-tailed grouse is listed as a sensitive species.
Yes.
Now, a lot of sensitive species are going to be chased after here in the next few weeks. The nature...
Not by the project.
Okay. Not by the project, right. Maybe by me. why is sharp-tailed grouse listed as a sensitive species? Is that nesting areas in each of those cases?
I have my lead biologist here. If you would like to pose that question to her, she's much better qualified than a chemical engineer, even if educated in Grand Forks.
I would be interested, actually, in the listing of, I mean, game species, basically, is sensitive. Would it be possible on some of the major sites, if we could just walk through the maps, the major cultural inventory sites? Are you prepared to give us a quick outline of, you know, where there's a large...
I will do my best attempt. Okay. If it gets beyond my expertise. We do have representatives from MedCAF here available.
Sure,
for
and I don't know that.
And they did a very lovely job. You will note that tab 4 almost in its entirety is their report. So.
Okay, yeah, and some of the smaller ones I guess I'm not as interested in, but perhaps just for the record here today and for the benefit of anyone who's listening in, if we could just talk about some of the major ones, if you're familiar with exactly what that is, and I'll quickly flip.
And I'm just to let you know, I'm immediately going to the cheat sheet, which is after tab 4 in their report, starting with page A2.
Okay.
So it's like, because I think they have summarized these sites, and I might have to cheat and look at their maps, because of course they have the SHPO designators on them. But I'll take my best attempt and quickly bow out if necessary.
The first one I note is figure 4B6A route map. It looks like it's the map that covers Little Missouri crossing on the north side of the Missouri before the breaks. There's a line of cultural inventory sites. Are you familiar with what those are?
Those are prehistoric sites, I believe. And beyond that, you're rapidly out of my area of expertise.
Okay.
And I would ask that if you want some specifics, we can call the representatives from MedCAF for those.
Okay, very good. And then the sites that were the subject of your discussion.
Now, if you want to back up, Kathy, maybe while you're on plate 6, there actually is something pretty significant there that's pretty small. and it's hard to see, but Kathy, you want to cover that pork chop issue?
Teeny weeny, if you would follow the line just kind of as it dives down the river from the north.
Yep.
It's in section 23, just north of the 23.
Yep.
There's a teeny weeny little pork chop shaped area. That is a prehistoric site. And it's an issue, certainly we would want to avoid it in a greater distance than what is shown here. However, because of the topography, the cliff actually starts. And so this is one of those areas where we're going to fence the boundary of the archaeological site to make sure that who's ever driving the big rig knows where it's at to avoid it. But we're going to have to severely narrow the construction zone because topographically it's got a sharp drop.
Okay, so this is one of those areas.
So we would have loved to have been a bit further away from that one, but there just really isn't a lot of issue.
You must be fairly close to the DGC line at that point.
The DGC line actually runs up the adjacent finger, so it depends on your definition of close. We're more than 70 feet away, I think. Because they actually went up a different finger from the...
To the east?
Yeah, to the east. Actually, that straight line running north and south, I would tell you, is probably pretty darn close, probably adjacent to the DGC line. They went up the east, almost where the Melchetch Indian plant is. This was routed up the adjacent finger.
Okay.
Again, because you probably only had 25 feet on their finger, and there wasn't room for us to, move 25 or 50 feet away and put in an adjacent line.
Sure.
And then the other question I would ask, that if you're going to request that Metcalf come to talk about that other site, they might as well do this one too.
Okay, sounds good. And forgive me if you mentioned this and I just didn't catch it, but the percentage of easements that have been received and signed on the project?
From a number standpoint, I believe it's 82 individual landowners, of which own 96 parcels. I think we're at 47 or 48% complete as far as number of owners. From a percentage of the distance of the route, it's far more than half. But from an actual number of landowners, it's about half. And I'm not counting two or three that are in transition that haven't been recorded yet.
Okay. You'd mentioned the closest residents, and I noticed there were a few that were listed on here. Was it the one that was at 500 some feet? Was that the? I can't recall which map it was on.
It's on the south half, and I would have to. I mean, you can see on the aerial, you can see some of the rural farmsteads.
Right.
But I was going to point out, and they're relatively small. Areas on the map, and so I might have to look at it while you're conversing with someone else.
Right.
But we can get you that information.
Yeah, I caught it earlier, and it was 500 and some feet. I just can't remember exactly where it was. But that would be the, or do you know the closest residence just in feet to the?
It's marked on the map. We did mark it on the map.
But you can confirm it is outside the 500-foot.
Yes, I can confirm.
Area. Okay.
Yes, we can.
That's all I've got. Thank you.
Any further questions from the commission?
Just one quick one, if I could, Judge.
Thank you,
Kathy.
Polk.
Tell me again the topsoil, how you're going to break the topsoil out and what you're going to do.
What will be done initially is for equipment to come in and strip back the topsoil to essentially identify the boundary of the construct, we'll call it the construction zone. And essentially it'll be placed on the perimeter of the construction zone where it essentially will remain undisturbed. At that point, you've got the center, and typically they'll push it back centrally located, or maybe just off to the side a little bit to accommodate the equipment. And then they'll come in with the trench and stir up the subsoil, open the trench, stack the soil adjacent to the trench, do what they need to do to physically install the pipe, lay it in the trench, cover it back over, and then at the end come back in and put the topsoil over. So essentially what you're doing is segregating the topsoil so it essentially remains relatively undisturbed. It also has the advantage of providing the boundary for the construction workers to make sure they're not tooling off somebody else's property, and it also prevents stormwater from running on, and likewise you know, any contamination, whatever else that could possibly occur would be contained within that construction right away, and then to accommodate, you know, cleaning up if that's something like that was necessary.
Okay, great. The judge, just I had a lot of questions for her when Tad was testifying. Now back the other way, I have a few more for Tad, and I think for me personally, I'd like to talk to one of the biologists too.
I'm sure that Mr. Morrison would recall Mr. Trope.
That's all I had for Kathy. Thank you.
Any further questions from the commission? Follow-up, Mr. Morrison?
I have no follow-up questions.
Follow-up, Mr. Armstrong?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Fawn?
No questions.
All right. We need a break, I'm sure. So let's be in recess for about 10 minutes until 20 minutes after 2. We'll be in recess until 20 minutes after 2. If there's anyone who would like to talk to me about making a